Hi, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to our continuation. And it's a bit, a bit of time has passed. Our continuation of the externalization of the hierarchy. We're dealing with the very beginning of the book, as I did actually start on page 61. And I want to pick up what is said here in the very beginning. We looked at one of the tasks of the new group of world servers and of advancing humanity. And the first task was to learn to work with light in emulation of Hermes and of the Christ, representing respectively the third ray and the second ray. Now, the second task here, and I suppose when he talks about this group, he's speaking of the glamour group particularly. Okay. Yeah. He's speaking of the glamour group, and their second task is to act as a bridge for the forces which are seeking etheric expression and which emanate from soul levels via the mind, soul, mind, brain. And he says, I have earlier pointed out in a treatise on white magic that the astral plane is itself an illusion, not necessarily the matter that constitutes that plane, but what has been, how that matter has been shaped and how it has been created into forms which are glamorous and illusory. When the first task of the groups working with world glamour is established or is accomplished, this will be evident. I can give you as yet no real idea of the underlying meaning, for you are all working in some measure upon the plane of illusion and of glamour. And for you, the world illusion exists, and the astral plane is for you a fact. What we really need is for the light of the soul and the light of the intuition to penetrate the astral plane and to dissipate the glamorous forms, and in that way, the astral plane will disappear. The Agnisurians will still exist, and in the magical process they will be used, but the glamorous attachment of these energies to forms which are illusory and have no reality, they will cease to exist. So we're all, in a way, working within this world illusion, and at least for us it is a fact in consciousness. But this I can say, says the Tibetan, for the initiate members of the Great White Lodge, the astral plane does not exist. They do not work on that level of consciousness, for the astral plane is a definite state of awareness, even if from the spiritual angle, it has no true being. So as we move towards the possibility of becoming members of the hierarchy, we will see through the phenomena of the astral plane, and we will understand how these phenomena have been created, and we will not attend to them as if they were realities, but instead will be involved in the dissipation of these reality obstructing forms. It embodies the great creative work of humanity down the ages and is the product of the false imagination and the work of the lower psychic nature. Its instrument of creative work is the sacral and the solar plexus centers. Now, we have seen that some of the ancient astral fears are connected with the sacral center, not only with the solar plexus. And we read that in the instructions to the disciple RSW, with whom Keith Bailey and I had a connection toward the end of her life, and learned from her perspective. When the energies finding expression through these two centers have been transmuted and carried to the throat from the sacral center and the heart from the solar plexus by advancing humanity, then the foremost people of the race will know that the astral plane has no true existence. And yet we are told that those energies of that level of nature are in danger of being siphoned off and of disappearing and of thereby causing the death of the magician. So there's a difference between the unreality of the astral phenomena and the matter of a certain vibratory quality which has been built into those forms through the false imagining of humanity down the ages, aided and abetted by the obstructive power of the Black Lodge, feeding glamour. Okay, so the astral plane has no true existence, no true existence. Maybe that's the word which should be emphasized. They will then work free from its impression. You know, we'll have the soul-mind-brain connection without the deflecting presence of false desire, glamorous false desire. They will then work free from its impression, and the task of freeing humanity from the thraldom of its own creation, its own imaginative creation, will proceed apace. So we have to learn to see through the illusion on this greatest plane of illusion, when the term illusion is being used in a general sense. And it's going to be a big job. And first comes the cleansing of the etheric plane, as he instructs us to accomplish in Rule 10 in the Rays and the Initiations. In the meantime, a group of disciples is being slowly built up, of which this second group is a part, and in which it can play an important function, even that little group, and occupy a key position, which can gradually aid in the task of dispelling the great illusion, and can also act also as a bridging group so that those who are freeing themselves from glamour can find their way into the vortex of influence wielded by the group, empowered thus to work. So even the little group which he was attempting to train, and you know, the training of which will continue as the seed group project is a 275-year project, even that little group can aid humanity and even play an important function, because it will know in this matter of dissipating glamour some of the occult technicalities, which will make the whole process much more efficient, much more effective. I mean, there are those who want to see the truth and want to see behind the unreality which has been created by the human imagination over the many millions of years, but they don't have yet the occult methods, and that's why it can be so important. So important for the esoteric group to come forward and present what it knows in a palatable manner. That's the key, of course. You cannot present occultism to the unready. You know, it's the old thing about, well, it's so graphic, but, you know, pearls before swine, and they'll throw them back at you and rend what you offer. It's just the way of the response of the unready, and we ourselves, maybe not so long ago, have been in the position of the unready. Now maybe we understand a bit more. So when this bridging group is working to help human beings free themselves, three things can happen. Okay, and let's see what those things may be. Number one, that those who thus approach the group will find their efforts to live free of glamour greatly helped and intensified by the group assistance. This, of course, is what this is what serving seed groups are supposed to do. They really help those who approach, and they deliver to those who approach something from the ashram or ashrams they represent, something ameliorative, something helpful, curative, we might say. Then they will swell the number of those so working and hasten the process of dissipation. All of this is coming in the next centuries in a very applied manner. And then number three, the hierarchy will be enabled then to work more closely upon the earth and to approach much nearer to mankind. And, what's important here is that these seed groups are like doors which allow the flow of hierarchical energy to pass through and to reach humanity. So through every seed group, the hierarchy can reach humanity in a distinctive manner. So here the numbers can swell, yes, and here the people can be helped. They will find their efforts to live free of glamour greatly helped. That is, these are all worthy objectives. So the seed groups really do play a very important role in bringing hierarchical influence to humanity more rapidly in a more concentrated manner, helping to raise the point of tension of those who approach, and helping to reveal reality rather than seeing the continued entrapment of the glamored people in false perceptions. Okay, the third function, okay, of the second group. This is maybe some of the first material that he has been writing about these groups in the second decade. It wasn't so much the reappearance of the Christ and the externalization, which was the main focus. It was world goodwill, it was triangles, it was the seed groups. Those were the major foci during that second decade of Alice Bailey's work. The third function of the second group lies in a more distant future. Okay, that seems reasonable. the hierarchy lays its plans far in advance, and they stride centuries, we are told. We may walk a few steps every day, but their pace is striding the centuries. The hierarchy has necessarily a department of workers whose major task is to work solely in the world of illusion and with astral matter. Now, those who take the fifth path of magnetic work, leading to the cosmic astral plane and involving both the signs Gemini and Libra, this advancing group is also aiding in a major way this work upon the astral plane that the masters are carrying out. The liberated Shohans on their way to the cosmic astral plane work from thence and facilitate the work of the masters whose task it is, and initiates whose task it is to work solely in the world of illusion and of astral matter. Many, many things are covered, many difficulties are met. We don't see the way they are met, but we have the Tibetan's word that when these difficulties exist such that only occult methods can ameliorate them, then the hierarchy is certainly engaged. This department, interesting about it, this department came into being in Atlantean days when the great controversy took place between those who embodied the consciousness or soul aspect of deity and those who were similarly representative of the matter aspect of deity. Well, we have in the discussion of the great Atlantean battle involving Krishna and Arjuna, we have the playing out of these two groups as if they were members of the same family, which maybe was the case, but certainly symbolically, they are members of the same family. So, and this has carried on until this present day. I mean, you can see the recrudescence of this war. He calls it a controversy, but okay, it degenerated into a war. And our great war, World War I and II, are a continuation on a higher turn of the spiral of the same battle that occurred millions of years ago in Atlantis. And somewhere he tells us the shocking thought that the leaders of each of these groups, one representing the personality and the other, the soul, are the same leaders as were active in Atlantean days. Symbolically speaking, the left hand and the right hand paths came into being. Certainly there was an emphasis upon the division and the need to fight it out so that the divine plan could indeed advance. White and black magic were brought into conflict with each other. Maybe before that they existed, but were not brought into decisive conflict. And the pairs of opposites, always existent in manifestation, became active factors in the consciousness of advanced humanity. So it is advanced humanity, even now, that is aware that there are a pair of opposites, or is a pair of opposites, and one of them is higher than the other. And their relationship is pretty well dramatized in the Libra-Gemini relationship, which fits very well, I think, with the idea that those on the path of magnetic work are involved in helping to purify the astral plane and thus contributing to the victory of those who side with the soul and with the divine plan. So it's one thing for two different methods to exist, one of those methods being aided and abetted by the Black Lodge, or the Lords of Form and Materiality. And it's another thing for these two methods to engage in conflict. And probably because humanity was coming closer and closer to the possibility of initiation. In Atlantean times, it really took off. It really began. The offering of accelerated growth was there, and this the Black Lodge could not abide, and hence the attacks. I think there's a long, long movie about the Mahabharata, and is it Peter Brooks, something like that, 9 hours long, about the great battle between the two sides. And as most of us were Atlanteans at some point, even those who came from the moon chain, more advanced, more experienced group, we were implicated somehow in this great battle. Of course, we've forgotten all about that, but one day the review will come, and we'll see how we participated. The battle of discrimination was open. Sounds like the fifth ray, doesn't it? And the fifth sub-ray of the fourth ray, or the fifth sub-root race, sub-race of the fourth root race, brings in this factor of discrimination. The battle of discrimination was opened, and humanity became active upon the field of Kurukshetra, which is as much symbolic as it is perhaps actual. I mean, we're told that some miles south of Delhi, what is now Delhi, the great battle took place. And we're told many things about the kind of weaponry and advanced methods that were used in that battle. It appears that the forces of light prevailed, but they also had to withdraw to leave progress, humanity's progress, more to humanity. Maybe too many things were given, and humanity did not appreciate the gift. And so the forces of light had to withdraw and supervise from within and establish the mysteries for those who could go past the apparent ring pass knot, separating the field of work of the White Lodge from humanity's customary field of work. So the battle of discrimination was opened. And if you look at the fourth sub-level of the mental plane, which is the highest of the concrete levels of the lower mental plane, you see that the city or power that is being cultivated there is discrimination. Where there is no conscious response to a condition and no registered awareness, there is no problem of responsibility as far as the soul is concerned. In Atlantean times, this condition was evoked, and hence the problem facing the race today. We are now knowledgeable and responsible. Hence the task of the hierarchy to free the souls of men from the surrounding glamour and to enable them to achieve liberation. The culmination of the issue and the controversy then initiated is now upon us. And this is being written in the 30s, you know. So let's say that an amazing evolution over millions of years has led to the present battle, which in some ways is again underground, just the way it went underground between World War I and World War II. And the big question is, will it be precipitated again upon the physical plane? Probably with very disastrous results as far as humanity is concerned. It would be a religious war, we're told, and Shambhala would be involved in the war, some references say for the first time. There have been Shambhala impacts, but as far as a war goes, the involvement of Shambhala would be catastrophic from the perspective of the present structure of human civilization. Anyway, we're living in the time of continuance, and the great leaders have been those who were involved in that huge battle, both symbolic and actual. Hitler, Churchill, FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, that is, and others facing again each other, a standoff when yet another advancement is looming before the human race, namely the initiation of the entire human race in the first initiation, or at least it can be considered that the human race will undergo its first initiation, even though there will be many individuals within it who cannot yet possibly attain that level. So we're dealing here with something called the third function of this second group lies in a more distant future. And let's see, there's a bit more about it. The third function, therefore, of the group can be grasped at this time. And eventually this branch of the hierarchical effort can find due expression upon the earth. So hierarchies attempt to liberate the souls of men from glamour is imminent, although it may be some centuries before this can be accomplished. Hopefully we don't have to wait until the judgment day, you know, when those who remain with the earth will definitely be on one or other stages of the great path of initiation, from aspirant to disciple to probationary initiate to initiate and so forth. Okay, so he goes on then. From the above analysis of opportunity, it is evident how the groups have a definite place in the plans of the hierarchy. These are the seed groups, and we're particularly, I think, dealing with the first three of them, which are kind of archetypal to the others. By developing spiritual sensitivity and achieving freedom from glamour, the disciples who are members of these groups can raise the racial consciousness and bring in illumination. So we begin to see the responsibility of those who know they are members of these groups and who are enjoined to work at making the groups successful. It should be remembered that it is inspiration which is the goal of all true telepathic work, you know, to breathe in the fire, the deity, the fire of God from the higher planes, and illumination, which is the reward of our effort, that's the second group, and the real instrument for the dissipation of world glamour. So he's combined in a sequence the work of the first group of telepathic communicators and the second group of the observers, trained observers of reality. Obviously, it takes some training, doesn't it? So a continuity is given here. Inspiration first, and then illumination based on inspiration. Thus, these groups can nurture the germ of the future culture, which is sort of the qualitative seed of the civilization, coming civilization, act also as bridging units, and externalize certain departmental activities of the planetary hierarchy, the next great desire of its members, but only certain aspects, yet manifest and for man, and useful for man. And all of this is coming, it's part of the divine plan, it's laid out in great detail, really, for those who really are initiate and within the ranks of hierarchy, those who really know. And for people like ourselves, we are learning. Now, the next group is being taken up. At least, you know, Master DK managed to externalize to some extent the first three groups and the fourth and just a little part of the fifth. And there were others for which he had plans, but the Great War, the continuation of the earlier war millions of years ago, intervened, and the work had to be readapted to the circumstances. I imagine that the seed group work will continue, and that will be, I suppose, one of the whole major thrusts that is presented in this third installment that we have been promised around the year 2025. Okay, now the third group, and these are the magnetic healers, you know. And there really is, in a way, such progress in the alternative methods of healing. It's a bit more closely associated with the physical plane than is the work of the trained observers or telepathic communicators, each growing successively more subtle. So, turning now to the work of the third group, we find ourselves concerned with the task of the magnetic healers of the world, and this has been dealt with elsewhere, i.e. in esoteric healing. Some of these are maybe inserted statements because, that book did follow the writing of the astrology book, and so it all took place in the later 30s, I would guess. We can find out, you know, more exactly. And some of it was not published until much later. It was available to students, close students of the Tibetan. If you think about it, it's a huge book. I mean, it must have been many, many lessons. And it shows DK's very close association with the whole esoteric healing art. By respectively, the glamour book and the telepathy book are much smaller in scope. So magnetic healers, okay. And, you know, he has said, in a way, of the first three groups, it's the most material of the first three groups. It is of interest to note that the work of this group is perhaps one of the hardest to carry through, although from another angle, it is far easier than the task of most of the other groups, because the consciousness of the bulk of humanity is found to be predominantly upon the plane of illusion, and therefore, as the old commentary says, they who work to bring in light and yet are surrounded by the maya of the senses work from the point of present being and need not to move out or in or up or down. They simply stand. So basically it's telling us we're already there for the kind of work that is to be done in this group, and we just hold our position and there we work. Now, you know, DK was very discerning and he knew which among his students, or who among his students, would be suited for which particular group. And he assigned them, I think, accordingly. So he's going to tell us maybe something about the difficulty in bringing this hierarchical influence through, and yet, in a way, its ease. Certainly, you know, when you look at the developments today, there's tremendous interest in the new possibilities of the healing arts. Not that they are necessarily Master DK's methods, but the attention is there. Maybe it's because still the physical body is considered to be the real man. And the healing of the physical body has been understood by those who are progressive to depend upon etheric energy patterns, which can carry higher energies and disruptive energies, astral energies and illusory mental energies. But the main problem is with the field of emotions carried into the etheric levels and then transferred to the dense physical levels. We are so, at this time, I can just say, body conscious. And still, the average human being thinks that he or she is the body. And it's treated with scrupulous attention by those who care, of course. Sometimes people just neglect the vehicle, and it's usually a sign of lack of will or some kind of despair, some kind of relinquishment of hope, depression, you know. People who are depressed in their chemomanasic field are generally not going to be those who care for the body in the way it should be cared for. But depression will lift, and health is coming, and a greater resiliency, etheric physical resiliency under the seventh ray is coming. The healers of the world upon the physical plane have to work upon that plane, and their task is that of bringing through the energies of life emanating from the soul plane via the mind, but excluding the emotional. And that's really important. The magician does not exclude the emotional, but so often we are called upon to preserve the alignment of soul, mind, brain, and avoid that astral field which so often destroys the desirable alignment. It's the circulation of soul energy that brings health. And be nice to be able to find this. The rules for healing are extremely important. And the very first rule, I'm not sure I can find it, but rule one, and you won't see this right now, but okay, if I go to esoteric healing and I go backwards to maybe rule one, let's see if anything shows up. Maybe something does show up, and so many of the different rules and laws are here. This would maybe be law number one. Okay, I know I'm taking a little bit of our time here, but maybe we can, here it is. So basically what I'll do is switch the screen and say all disease under law one, all disease is the result of inhibited soul life, and this is true of all forms in all kingdoms. The art of the healer consists in releasing the soul so that its life can flow through the aggregate of organisms which constitute any particular form. I think that pretty well says it. And so we have to bring in the energies of life emanating from the soul plane, of course, emanating from still higher planes, but passing through the what we call the soul, or at least the vehicle of the soul on the higher mental plane, then via the mind, but excluding the emotional. These energies have to be brought through into physical consciousness, and from the physical level, do their necessary and magnetic work. And that's important. From the physical level, they do their magnetic work. Now, so much attention will be given to this particular area because we simply are conscious of the body as if it were the reality. Okay. What I'm trying to do here is, So the task of the healers, if successful, involves what? The bringing through of healing divine energy. Now, when the word divine is used, again, it could represent the soul, and it also can represent the monad. He does make a distinction between spiritual and divine, with the word divine applying to the highest two planes, which involve the monad. The exclusion of the astral world, and therefore of illusion, in this case, the word illusion is not being used in the technical mental sense, but the astral plane is considered the greatest plane of illusion, and the utilization of the healing energy in full waking consciousness upon the physical plane. So the idea is, what brings real healing success? Divine energy comes through, the astral world is excluded, and we can utilize the healing energy right here upon the physical plane. It doesn't sound so difficult, but of course it's a great art and science and has to be long cultivated. Most of the healers in the world are working as follows. And so here is kind of a classification, I think, of methods that are not the ones he would recommend. Number one, as purely physical healers, dealing with the vital forces of the physical body and with their own consciousness polarized in the etheric body. So that's the etheric physical level particularly. Let's see here. Most of the healers, just so we can get that. So as purely physical healers, that is the first possibility. Okay. And then as emotional astral psychics, with the consciousness polarized upon the astral plane and utilizing the astral body and working in and with glamour and illusion. The effect of their work, if successful, and I would have you note that if, for I deal with the idea of relative permanency, may be one of two things. Okay. I'm assuming that DK is not presuming that this is the best method of working, however many may work this way. Number one, they may cure the physical ills in the patient which are of such a nature that the inner astral desire, therefore the lower desire, has eventuated in physical disease experienced in some aspect or organ of the physical body. Now, this sounds, you know, reasonable and maybe desirable, even if it's not his particular method. Or they may intensify the effect of the illusion of desire in the physical brain consciousness and cause such a violent increase of the active energies that death may occur before so very long. This is quite a frequent happening. Nevertheless, death is a cure. Remember this. Okay, I'm reminded of the phrase that for the truly suffering individual, they seek relief and release in death. So that is a possibility. Under these two categories, the bulk of the world healers are found sometimes doing good, oft doing harm, even if not realizing it, and even if, as is usually the case, of good intention. There are three other categories of healers, however, to add to the two above. So this is the second category, is assessing the field, you know. Mental healers, okay. Mental healers. Let's see. Mental healers in the truest sense of the word. Most mental healers unduly flatter themselves and work not with their minds at all. They have much mental theory and astral methods. Desire is the motivating power and not mental impulse. The true mental healer only brings about his results when he knows something of illumination in the technical and academic sense and of the power of light to dispel illusion. Either maybe the illusion of the astral plane or, well, more specifically, the illusions of the lower mind. Disease is not an illusion. It is a definite effect of a real cause from the standpoint of average humanity. When healers can work mentally, they deal with the causes of disease and not with the effects. So, you know, again, he's straightening out our misconceptions. And telling us that what we think is mental healing is not really so. Not really. Okay. Now, adding to that, those healers whose soul contact is established and who work with the souls of people. And I think, you know, this is more the kind of method that he will promote as safest and most effective. Work through the souls of people, enabling them to A, stand in spiritual being, B, to work free from illusion, C, to achieve true perspective upon the physical plane, and D, to coordinate the personality and the soul so that the will of the inner spiritual man can work out upon the physical plane. I think his methods very much include this particular fourth method. And I'll, you know, put it in kind of the indigo color. I know it's hard to see, but I think we can see it if we look closely enough. And what I'll do is make it a little larger, which generally helps visibility. So there's a freeing up here as we stand in spiritual being, subject to the downflow of the soul and maybe higher energies, working free from camomanus or from the illusion of the mental plane and what is sometimes called the illusion of the astral plane. And, well, we have to have the mind held steady in the light here. I can see that. And to achieve real perspective, true perspective upon the physical plane. It sounds demanding. And then, you know, to integrate the personality, to coordinate it with the soul so that the will of the soul, the inner spiritual man, can work out upon the physical plane. And the inhibition of soul life is no longer operative, and the flow of soul life is operative. And then number five, those who can work as is eventually intended that this third group should work, definitely as outposts of the consciousness of the hierarchy of masters. This work will be done in group formation and with a united, synthesized effort, you know, group healing here, the group healing instrument. And the personal effect of such healers is therefore A, to coordinate the personality of the patient. They are themselves coordinated. In other words, they have the soul personality connection and a degree of infusion. B, to bring about contact with the soul on the part of the patient. They are themselves vitally in contact. In other words, they can do for the patient what they have done for themselves, and especially if they work in group formation. C, to fuse and blend the personality and the soul. It's not just contact, it's more now. And thus provide an instrument for the distribution of spiritual energy. And they are themselves thus fused. We can only really do for others what we have done successfully for ourselves. Otherwise, we're just talking. And D, to understand the use and use the laws of true spiritual healing through intelligent activity upon the mental plane, a mind held steady in the light, through freedom from glamour and through such a right use of force that the instrument of the soul, the personality, becomes vitally magnetic. Well, this is a really big accomplishment, to be able to do all the things that he is suggesting here. And so we understand that healing is not something one just dives into and simply does, you know, fools rushing in where angels fear to tread, and oftentimes counteracting the a Hippocratic oath to do no harm. You know, the doctors, the true, even, you know, in conventional life, they take the Hippocratic oath, they should do no harm. So they can help here. The group can help. This is work to be done in group formation and with united, synthesized effort. But of course, we have to work upon ourselves before we are fit to join such a group. So coordination, that's number one. Just to emphasize a little. And contact is number two. Coordination, contact, fusing and blending the personality and the soul. That's number three. And understanding the laws of true spiritual healing through intelligent activity upon the mental plane. Well, let's just leave it. True spiritual healing, and then on every plane, some achievement has to be accomplished. So there is freedom from mental illusion and astral glamour illusion and physical maya. You know, the sense of order in the medical field is so important. And when the veil of impulsion, the first veil, which induces chaos and irregularity, is operative, then we're not going to bring about the physical effects which are desirable. We may simply contribute to the worsening of the disease. He says, I would remind you that such effort in the early stages, and those stages are the present ones, he doesn't expect that the readers of his book will advance beyond the early stages, at least at this time, until they are further instructed, that such effort in the early stages results inevitably in the development of a critical spirit through the intelligent efforts being made and the discriminative recognition of glamour in many cases, because only through such an effort can analysis of a right kind eventually be achieved and criticism eliminated. I think we all know that we have to learn to discriminate analysis within the field of synthesis from criticism per se, which is so often, you know, not constructive criticism at all, but tends to tear down or compromise the one who is criticized. So these are inevitable traps along the way. Results inevitably in the development of a critical spirit. And this has to be avoided. An analytical, clear-seeing spirit is what is needed. In the meantime, those thus in training are oft a difficulty and a problem both to themselves and to their friends and co-workers. But this phase is temporary and leads to a more lasting relationship and to the emergence of that true magnetic link and love, which must heal and lift and stimulate all that it may contact. So he speaks from experience, and he knows the traps that lie ahead, and he seems to indicate that they cannot be avoided. But I suppose the amount of time spent within the trap can be greater or lesser according to the attitude of the one who is trapped in criticism. I think if a patient feels criticism from the healer rather than analysis within the field of loving synthesis, very great damage can be done and not much in the line of real healing can be accomplished. Okay. In the coming Aquarian age, we shall see humanity producing a culture which is sensitive to the finer and higher spiritual values. A civilization which is based on the culture, which is free from the glamour and from much of the illusion which today colors the Aryan peoples, those people who are possessing much of the fifth root race consciousness. And a racial life which will be embodied in those forms which will bridge the gap at present existing. It will be free from what we now know as disease of the worst kind, though death and certain forms of bodily breakdown may eventually end in death, will of course, which may eventually end in death will be still prevalent. The overcoming of death is not contingent upon the elimination of bodily ills, but upon the establishing of that continuity of consciousness which carries over from the physical plane of life to the inner subjective existence. Of this state of being, groups such as this third group can be the custodian. Okay. So a promise of what healing will be like in the future and how it will affect humanity, not ending death, but certainly ending the fear of death and making the transition from the physical plane to the astral plane, in most cases, far more easy of accomplishment. It will take away the dread and the panic and the hopelessness and the, the so-called Dabda sequence when faced with death, denial, D, anger, A, B, bargaining. Maybe that can work sometimes. D, depression. And A, acceptance. It all sounds, a bit hopeless and not anticipatory that a wider and brighter form of life awaits in the what Master DK calls the eternally lovely secret of death. It's so hard to convince ourselves and others that there is an eternal loveliness in the secret of death. And I suppose on the other side, we do realize it only to once again drink of the waters of forgetfulness, the river Lethe, and be plunged back into the fear on the lower levels of existence. So higher spiritual values are coming, and we can, have confidence in that, and that confidence makes us more effective and brings us towards a realization that it is a joy to do the Master's work, and freedom from glamour and illusion, which colors today even the Aryan group. Maybe by the time we reach the sixth root race, which will be in not so long at all, really, we will be free of this glamorous and illusory coloring. Not everybody, maybe, but in general, much greater freedom. And we can bridge the gap. And our attitude towards disease will be much different. Disease, as we know it, will be much reduced. All of this related to the health-inducing effects of the seventh ray. And death will be there. As a matter of fact, he tells us that death may be sought much earlier once a person has accomplished what he must accomplish in life. It will be deliberately undertaken, and the methods of deliberately, meditatively undertaking the transition of death will be known. So the third group then here will be the custodian of this kind of knowledge and of this continuity of consciousness. And then as a result of that, they will have a problem. And he now gives us what this problem may be. And their problem is, therefore, number one, to establish that state of personality development which will lead to magnetic living upon the physical plane. So often the healers, to be a true magnetic healer, have to have that crown center, ajna and alta center, functioning successfully as a triangle of energies in circulation. Number two, to study the laws of life, which are the laws of health and of right relationship. There is a definite connection between right relationship on every level, even the organs, you know, and the people, and the health of the nation, the states, and the health of the international community, the countries, and the health of humanity, its relation to the other kingdoms. Right relation brings health. And then number three, to develop that continuity of consciousness which will open the doors of life and dispel the fear of the known and of that which disappears. Well, I guess we're all of us attached in the beginning, and we're attached to this great illusion of the reality of that which the lower senses report to us. And we have to banish this idea that that to which we are attached is real. It's actual, all right, and it is a presentation in consciousness, but it's not real. It's an obstruction to the apprehension of reality. So we have this problem, or should we say this challenge, in this group, this third group, that we must live magnetically and therefore actually as agents of healing. So magnetic living is one of the projects which must be somewhat accomplished, and study the laws of life and of health and of right relationship. All of that is important. And then to apply it, of course. And to develop continuity of consciousness. And he gives us, in Dina 2, he gives us a method of sort of falling asleep consciously instead of drifting off. And, you know, sometimes it may work, and with cultivation, it will work. We have faith in that. So, from the angle of the work of the world healers, and above, the above is a statement of opportunity. You know, now when we have the world disciples, it pretty well indicates an initiative of the third degree, maybe sometimes of the second degree. And what does it mean, a world healer? Does it mean like an initiate healer? From the angle of the work of the world healers, the above is a statement of opportunity. This they face as the nucleus, or one of the germs or seeds of the new civilization and the coming culture. It embodies the objective of all their work and their contribution to the united work of the groups. That's so important that each group actually will enhance the work and ability of the others. You can understand that, well, let's just say right economics enhances all the groups, and a knowledge of the true psychology, the same. And scientific research, the same. You can draw lines of relationship between the anticipated hope for output of any of these groups and the well-being of the other groups. You know, your instrument has to be in a particular state of receptivity in order to be a telepathic communicator. Well, when the work of the other groups is really operative, then that much more of telepathic receptivity can occur. It would be an interesting little project to draw lines of connection between any of the seed groups and the others, any one and all the others. And certainly the good health of the third group, induced by the third group, is a great advantage to all of the other nine. So, a statement of opportunity, and they face this, these sayings, these statements here, as the germ, the seed of the new civilization and the coming culture. And what comes first? I think in a way the culture comes first, because it is of a higher order than its precipitation, the civilization. Equally so, they can bridge the gap at present existing in the racial consciousness between, number one, life and death, number two, the sick and the well. And this is, what does he say here? This is between A, the physically sick, and the inwardly well, which is the case with a very few of the advanced people, or the disciples of the world and the senior aspirants. B, the physically well and psychically sick, which is sometimes the case, but of a singular rarity. It does seem that Master Moria warned against this particular state because of the festival of darkness which would ensue when those of negative intention have healthy bodies. He said, what a festival of darkness. Number three, see the physically sick, the psychologically sick, and the overshadowing soul. This situation is often found today. And when we can bring in that overshadowing soul, we can overcome, in many cases, the physical sickness and the psychological sickness. Psychological sickness is including chemomanus, really, and it's a lower mind and astral condition. So the gaps have to be bridged. Let's see if I can maybe. I'll just make a note here. So we do want to make bridges all the time. And the fact that there are insufficient bridges sustains the situation of cleavage, which is always bringing pain and abnormality and conflict. So interesting about the ways sickness and wellness can manifest. It would be hard to say that one can be mentally sick and astrally well. I think the chemomanus there blends, and we don't have that kind of distinction. And number three, this is all about gaps, bridging gaps. Number three, the physical plane and the world of souls. Because of the development of a sound instrument and the dissipation of those causes which work out as effects in the physical body as disease and act as barriers to the inflow of soul energy and the entrance of soul awareness into brain activity. Well, you know, the weak and non-receptive physical body, you know, we're reminded of the reasons for the new schools. Mind is too concrete, the astral body is unstable, and the physical body is weak and diseased. And the new schools are supposed to help correct those conditions. Okay. So it's bridging work, and let's see, there's a bit more. Yeah, I'll try to finish this. This bridging work, when it occurs today, is often simply a fortunate but fortuitous happening, you know, almost by chance, and is not the result of a consciously planned bridging work. But it is the intent of the hierarchy that the groups which will be later formed and which are today in process of forming, including this third group of mine, he says, can aid in the process if such is the will of the constituent parts. So it's happening more by accident these days. I don't know what he would say today. We will see. A fortunate but fortuitous happening, and is not consciously planned and executed scientifically. Finally, every initiate is a magnetic healer. I mean, it's like when he said every initiate is really an esoteric psychologist. I suppose every initiate is a telepathic receiver and transmitter. At least, you know, we're talking in terms of the first three groups, and every initiate is unhampered by glamour and sees reality far more clearly than those who are subject to the chemomanus and glamour and illusion. Finally, every initiate is a magnetic healer. This is a statement of fact. Yeah, I'm reminded of this wonderful educator, Dr. Suzuki. He's passed on now, but he says, in the same way that every child learns his language, every child can learn to play the violin or the viola or the cello or, you know, one of those stringed instruments. That was his concentration. And he made it possible for so many thousands to gain a musical education in their childhood. And people began to notice that when they were around him, it wasn't so much what he said or whatever, they just started to feel better. They had this experience of greater wellness. So, you know, he was a soul-infused individual, so much along the second ray, and it was pouring through him. He was a kind of magnetic healer, maybe of an unconscious kind, maybe not yet a member per se of the hierarchy, who knows, but something very good happened as that magnetic loving energy poured through him. So every initiate is a magnetic healer. And this is a statement of fact. Good to think about that and what our presence means to other people. I'm reminded of a situation. It was in a church long ago, and the head minister was approached by someone who had just come out of the hospital. And, you know, a junior minister had been sent to the hospital to minister to the man. And basically, the man released from the hospital said, please never send that man again. Because I felt so drained, so weakened, so whatever, you know, by his presence. So, you know, without even knowing it, we can be vitalizing or vampirizing those around us. Sometimes stories are told of people who have etheric leaks, as it's called, and they drain others quite unconsciously so that they just feel exhausted after having some kind of conversation with such a person, unconscious of his difficulty. Well, anyway, a more conscious attitude is desirable. Though the members of the hierarchy have each of them their duly appointed functions and their planned activity dependent upon ray, upon race, and upon dedication. That's so interesting. There is one activity which they share in common, and that is the power to heal. And I suppose psychological healing is there as well. Whole making. They are, healing is whole making, and these advancing human beings have entered into a state of wholeness with respect to their soul and personality fusion and beyond, even triadal infusion and eventually monadic infusion. Their ability to act as magnetic healers works out in various ways, predominantly in the realm of psychological readjustments and psychic disentanglements, and only incidentally and as a result of the two above activities in the process of bodily healing. So it's more on the psychological level that the healing is occurring, but of course it will have its physical effect. And you know, Master DK says, look, I'm working with your soul predominantly here. But of course, he did offer physical advice as well. So something that is shared in common, this ability to readjust and disentangle. We all get so tied up in our glamours and illusions, and it's very hard to extricate ourselves because we just don't see how we are trapped. We say, well, that's the way I am, that's how I've always been, that's the way I will be. And we look at it as our nature, assigned by God and never to be changed. Well, obviously, that is untrue. DK goes on, he says, you will note from the above that the healing work done by the initiate members of the Great White Lodge, as there are, you know, probationary initiates in the Great White Lodge, at least on the periphery, that the healing work done by the initiate members of the Great White Lodge is threefold: psychological, bringing in the soul; psychic, releasing the lower psychic nature from illusion so that the psyche or soul can have full sway, the psychic nature as contrasted from the soul as psyche; and then physical, as the result of the inner psychological and psychic adjustments. So, three modes of healing, and important. And, you know, one, as one approaches hierarchy and with one's group stands on the periphery of the ashram, the great ashram, these healing powers are naturally developed. Psychological, bringing in the soul; psychic, and releasing the lower psychic nature from illusion so that the psyche or soul, the first one, can have full sway; and then the physical healing as a result of all of that. So this ends up being a really important statement regarding the three modes of healing, which are to be expected emanating from or radiating from the initiate members of the Great White Lodge. This triple healing activity is intended to be the objective of all groups working as this third group, the magnetic healers, should work. Thus will be brought about the emergence of hierarchical effort into outer activity. It will pass through, you know, the healing group. Thus, you will note, my brother, that the work of the first three groups just discussed, and viewing them as constituting one unit, three in one, produces a synthetic endeavor in the three worlds and leads from the plane of the soul to the plane of outer expression. So, because of these seed groups, the hierarchy can approach and bring its energy through. And to a certain extent, even when it externalizes, this will be the case. But then again, the certain members of the hierarchy will be visibly present on the earth, and the instruction will be that much more direct. And the synthesis of these three groups that much more expressed. So there will be a synthetic endeavor in the three worlds, and the fifth kingdom of nature will begin to appear, the kingdom of souls, which is pretty much the expression of the soul upon the outer plane. You don't have to, like, go to heaven somewhere else and experience the fifth kingdom of nature. It's got to be right here on the physical plane. So all of this is most promising, and really what we've done here now up to page 46 is we have worked with some of the C group effort. Now DK enlarged upon that elsewhere. And I'm not sure that he's going to. Yeah, well, there is about the education, political service. Yeah, he's going to say something about some of these other groups that he elaborates later. Maybe not all, but maybe more than I thought might be the case. So that goes to page 50, from 56 on to 61. Okay. And I'm just trying to, here we go. I'm just trying to get this ready. And it goes to page 39 to 46. I think that's it. And this is the end of number 11. Maybe number 10. That's it. And then 11 begins, which is what we've just done. Okay. So that's where it belongs, 39 to 46. And this is the 11th of July. Okay. So now I'll go down here to where we ended. We're getting close now, just about 15 pages remaining in the book, and then it really will be done. I feel, it should be like a first pass, but time being what it is or isn't, one has to make do with what one can do. So, finish, English, and right, here we are. So this takes us up to page 46. And it is number 11. And we'll begin with number 12. And we'll see what day we begin. We don't know. Probably not tonight. And 46 and onward. And it will talk about the work of the C groups. And that's pretty much, closing in on the point where I began on page 61. So there is still a span of 15 pages left, maybe a few programs. And here we are in 1938 in this collection of essays. And right away, we start with the fourth group. I can see that. Okay, friends, so that's going to be it for the moment. And a program of irregular length. And we will move on. Take up what DK says further. All of this, a great and voluminous teaching, all of the parts of which are interconnected. That is what we have to understand. Interconnected parts. And the more we can learn the connection between these different smaller aspects of the teaching, the more we will open the door to pure reason, which is a type of intuitive apprehension. is quite a high Mercurian thing, just as DK is a very, I think, very high Mercurian monad in a way. And it gives us an avenue through meticulous entirety to understand the relationship of all things within the sphere of knowledge, at least the sphere of knowledge that he has presented. Obviously, that sphere is much greater than we can understand in its totality, but we get the idea of the interconnectedness of the transcendental mind of Mercury operating upon the Buddhic plane. We're preparing for that as we work together, which is a step towards what we would call omniscience, or at least omniscience within a certain field. Not the universal field, but at least within a certain planetary ring past nod, and eventually beyond that. Okay. Thank you for being here. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll just proceed is what we'll do. We will simply proceed.